The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Our next guest is a failed art dealer. I hope he doesn't mind me calling that, but I think that's his calling card when it comes to writing the book All That Glitters. Orlando Whitfield, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Failed art dealer is okay, because at least we're not calling you a crooked art dealer like your old friend who's the subject of this book.
Yes, indeed. Well, I mean, 3 years in prison, $86 odd million owing. I'm quite pleased to be in my shoes and not Inigo's.
Your mate, Inigo Philbrick. Tell us about him. How did he become your friend? How did you work in business together?
So we met at art school at Goldsmiths in South London in around 2006 or seven. And pretty soon after that, decided that instead of trying to get a bar job, I guess, at university, we would try and do what we wanted to do when we finished university and sell some art. And that's what we did. We did it together for two or three years. Then we kind of went our separate ways. Inigo went to work for White Cube and I did other things for a while. But in about 2012, we started working together again.
When you say working together, what does an art dealer do?
Well, an art dealer is someone who just sells art, as opposed to, for example, what I would call a gallerist, who is someone who represents artists and acts almost like an editor would with a writer at a publishing company or a magazine. They help them move their ideas into a gallery space, to make their artworks come to fruition. Whereas a dealer is just that, someone who buys and sells artworks either on their own behalf or the behalf of someone else.
Okay, so when you say on your own behalf, you might take the risk in, say, buying a painting for, I'll just say for the sake of argument, 100,000 quid, hoping that you'll find somebody to buy it for 120,000 quid, that you take on the risk yourself in relation to that.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of dealers will mostly work on consignment. So they would, you would come to me and say, I have this painting again for £100,000 pounds or euros, whatever. And you would say, well, this is what I want you to get me. And so I'd take your picture and I go and speak to several other people and say, oh, I know you're interested in this artist. I have this wonderful thing. It comes from a private collection, etc. I'm asking 120,000. Anything I can get on top of what I need to net to my client is my bread and butter, basically.
So a bit like an estate agent on a house.
Yeah, not at all unlike that. Yeah, it's brokerage, essentially.
Okay, so in what sense then does that become crooked? Because you could take it that a piece of art intrinsically is only worth what somebody is willing to pay for it. And if somebody decides they're willing to pay 120,000 or 150,000 or 200,000, that's their decision, isn't it? And whether they're right or not, that's just how they decide to spend their money.
Well, you could be right one day and wrong the next. It will depend entirely on how the rest of the market moves with or against that particular artist's market. But as to where it becomes crooked and to return to it, to what Inigo did, as it were, there are, because the art market has become increasingly financialized, as in, quite a lot of the tools that you, or tools or products, I suppose you could say, that are seen and used in the financial markets are now becoming, more wide or prevalent in the art market. So quite often, if there is, say, a picture, let's stick with our 100,000 example, if there is a 100,000 euro artwork, which I want to buy in order to sell on down the line, because I think that in 5 years' time it might be worth double, but I don't want to take on the whole of the risk, I might come to you and say, well, would you like to buy a half share in this picture? Would you like to buy, would you give me 50,000 euros? And then we both own the picture together. And then when we sell it down the line for 200, we both split the profit equally. But in terms of what Inigo did, he was selling artworks, but not just half shares of artworks. He was selling, 20% of an artwork to one person, 10% to another. But where he really came unstuck, and of course, none of that is illegal, but what Inigo did, unfortunately, was to sell 120% more painting than existed. He sold 220% of the same artwork, which is obviously, a lot more artwork than actually exists.
And then when eventually that piece of art is sold, how does the money get distributed?
Well, the problem is it doesn't.
And that's where he
There
ran
isn't
into
enough,
trouble,
there
was
isn't
it?
enough, exactly. Yeah, there wasn't enough money to satisfy everyone who thought they owned a certain amount of that artwork.
Okay, but how was he managing to do this while he was working with you?
Well, no, this wasn't while I was working with Inigo. This all took place after I stopped working for Inigo. The FBI judges his fraud scheme to have started in around 2016, and I left the gallery in 2015. But what Inigo was doing was, he needed to raise money quite quickly, and so he would sell the same painting to multiple people in order to raise more money than the picture was worth.
And how much money did he raise for himself out of doing this?
Well, the FBI and the district attorney in the Southern District of New York estimate, well, what he has had to forfeit is his debt, as it were, is around 86, just under $87 million.
Which he's never going to repay, presumably.
I cannot imagine how he would be able to get that much money together, even if he does become an art dealer again, which he has, and since he's been out of prison, proclaimed his desire to do.
Oh, he wants to get back into the same business again.
Apparently so.
Would people deal with him? If they feel they could make money, do you think are there some people who might think he's worth the risk?
There are always people out there. It's called the greater fool theory. But I can't imagine that anyone who's already been stung by him would go anywhere near him again.
How do you properly value a work of art anyway? Is it just sort of something that it really just comes down to opinions and what opinions are prevalent at a particular time?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the art market is a funny one, given that it's worth, many billions of dollars every year, just the contemporary art market. And the contemporary art market especially, these are not artworks which have been judged by history to be, great masterpieces. We can probably all agree that, Picasso's Guernica and, the Mona Lisa, these are masterpieces. They have stood the test of time. But the artworks being sold, today, yesterday, last week, last month, there's no one is saying these are the masterpieces of the future. And so they're sold on an entirely kind of emotional basis, which is a bizarre way to run any kind of financial market.
But does it sort of become rigged and rigged by publicity in the sense that if you can get a good campaign going to say that artist X is wonderful and all his works are going to be worth more in the future, you get enough fools to buy into that, they buy the art. And then maybe suddenly, if enough people start saying, well, actually, the emperor has no clothes, this stuff is rubbish, then the price collapses and it's nothing ever more than the word of mouth at a particular time.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, it is a market in which, the loudest voice, the loudest opinion will always win out, will always influence the market unduly.
And then I suppose what really comes across in your book, All That Glitters, is the amount of bull that surrounds all of that and the amount of excess, isn't it? Because sometimes to persuade people that they're dealing in great value, you have the rich parties, the champagne lifestyle to go with it, that creates an illusion.
Absolutely. I mean, it's become a kind of how would we have it's a sort of global circus for the super rich. Art fairs on every continent. It's the reason to take your boat to a particular Greek island in the summer because X collector is opening a foundation there. It's the reason to go to skiing in Gstaad or in Aspen, and art gallery, you can see this trend reflected in where galleries are opening. Increasingly galleries are opening in kind of small alpine towns just for the winter, just for the summer, sorry, so that when their uber wealthy clients go hiking in the Swiss Alps, they can also pop in and buy a Giacometti at the end of the day.
It all sounds like a bit of nonsense.
it's mostly, I'm afraid that, you know, there is a lot of froth at the top of it. The problem with cases like Inigo's is that it really distracts from, you know, the good work being done by good gallerists, good dealers, of which there are many. But there is also this completely mad, very money charged part of the market, which is, as you say, nonsense.
He's out of prison now. He only served 3 of an 8-year sentence in an American prison. Has he helped you with this book?
I haven't heard from Inigo since 2021. So other than the documents that he sent me back in 2020 and the conversations that we had at that time, no, he hasn't actively helped me with this book since.
Is he an outlier when it comes to this market, or are there many others like him?
There are certainly others like him, but I wouldn't say he is definitely, or they are, outliers. I mean, the vast majority of the people in this world are doing it because they love art.
Apparently one of the producers of Succession has optioned your book for a potential TV series or movie. Who would you like to see playing you in the movie?
Oh, goodness, I've no idea. Timothy Chalamet in a fat suit, I'm not sure. I don't know that it's going to be a direct portrayal of me and or Inigo. I think it's I think they are planning a more fictionalized account of my book and the story therein.
Okay, the book is called All That Glitters, Orlando Whitfield. Thank you very much for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.